Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotin in Washington, D.C. The Electoral Commission of Sierra Leone releases preliminary results of Saturday's general election.
For me and many others, we are very much excited because we stand for change and we are expecting change in this year's election.
Ghana's ruling New Patriotic Party, or NPP, plans to end the filing of presidential nomination forms this week.
I can confidently say that the governing New Patriotic Party will snatch this seat from the opposition party.
And Zambia's opposition groups call on the international community to monitor the human rights situation in the country.
Political leaders are getting to be persecuted. There are a lot of arbitrary arrests happening. The rule of law is not being followed.
Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Commission of Sierra Leone is releasing preliminary results of Saturday's general election. In the presidential contest, main opposition leader Samora Kamara attempts to defeat incumbent President Julius Maada Bio, who is seeking a second and final term. For VOA, Eric Coward looks at the situation on the ground from the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown.
Saturday saw a large turnout of voters yearning to exercise their franchise. 13 candidates are contesting for the presidency. Voting was scheduled to begin at 7 a.m. local time, but delayed at some polling stations due to a late arrival of voting materials. According to the Electoral Commission of Sierra Leone, there are 16 electoral districts with 11,800 polling stations and more than 3,600 polling centers across the country. Results are expected to be announced in 48 hours. The elections are centered around many issues, including the economy, unemployment, agriculture, and food security. Abdul Waris Musa is among the many young people who voted in Saturday's polls.
For me and many others, we are very much excited because we stand for change and we are expecting change in this year's election. We definitely we are going to vote for the development of this country, not for party sake or whatever.
Many young people are registered to vote and many first-time voters are excited to exercise their franchise. However, 19-year-old Jason Robert says he registered for the elections but cannot vote due to his religious beliefs.
As a Jehovah's Witness, we should not be in any kind of political issues. We believe that there is no human that can satisfy everybody's needs as a government.
With recent reports of violence, there are many concerns about peace and security. Ansumana Keita heads the Building a Nation campaign, an initiative aimed at fostering peace and national cohesion.
In the campaign, we have our slogan, which is Peace for the. Peace for the is a local term, meaning there must be peace. Everybody deserves to support a political party, but let there be peace. And the campaign seriously advocating on politicians misleading and misusing the young people of this nation.
Keita further explains that they engaged young people in entertainment and sport to pass on their message. A candidate needs to secure 55% of vote cast to win on the first ballot. If no candidate meets the threshold, a runoff will be organized in 2 weeks. For VOA Africa, I'm Eric Kawa in Freetown.
In Ghana, the ruling New Patriotic Party plans to end the filing of presidential nomination forms this week. Local media reports say 10 aspiring candidates, including incumbent Vice President Mahamudu Bawumia and former Trade Minister Alain Tshermanting, will compete to lead the party in Ghana's general election next year. This as the party promises to win the coming by-election in Asin North in the central region on Tuesday. The poll is expected to be competitive between the NPP's candidate and the candidate of the main opposition National Democratic Congress, or NDC. Attorney Henry Nana Boachi is the national organizer of the governing NPP. He tells me that at least 120 projects carried out by the government, which he says residents of the area have demanded, pave the way for the party's candidate to win the contest.
I can confidently say that the governing New Patriotic Party will snatch this seat from the opposition party. This is the constituency where we have invested heavily in terms of infrastructure development. If you put together educational infrastructure, health infrastructure, road infrastructure, water, sanitation, and then rural telephony project, we are talking about close to about 120 completed projects. Another angle to it is that this is a constituency where the president won. And in 2020 elections, the president won. However, our parliamentary candidate lost. So we are very confident that with these development in the constituency and also with the effective campaign we have put together, the party is very confident that we are going to snatch the seat from the opposition party.
But Henry, what do you say to critics, including the main opposition NDC, saying that these infrastructure projects were an attempt by the governing party to, as it were, buy the votes just to entice them to vote for the party, in spite of what they described as the prevailing challenging economic conditions facing Ghanaians? How do you respond to that?
I think, first of all, I mean, those assertions are unfounded, because there's no way you can complete a 32-kilometer road in just a space of 1 month or 2 months. I mean, this is a road network we started about 2-3 years ago. We are having a district hospital, a major district hospital in that constituency, and there's no way you can complete a district hospital in a space of 2 months. So anybody would allude that because of a by-election, that is why we are hurriedly putting together all of these projects, is unfounded. Most of these road networks within the towns, which are being completed, started way back about 3 years ago. So it cannot be said that because of the by-election, that is why the government is putting together all of these things. I think that the facts on the ground do not support those assertions.
How credible do you think the by-election will be? Because I'm sure you've heard complaints from your main opponent saying that there appears to be an underhand dealing by the Electoral Commission just to undermine the integrity of the election, to ensure that the election is tilted in favor of the NPP candidate during the by-elections. Your reaction?
No, I don't think so. Again, let me remind you that we've just moved from one by-election to this particular one. Recently, we had a by-election in another constituency called Kumewu constituency. And in this constituency, the elections were conducted in a free, fair, transparent, and very conducive atmosphere. So I am not too happy when there seems to be the opposition party nurturing this penchant attitude of always bad-mouthing the Electoral Commission. I mean, we only have one Electoral Commission in Ghana here, and they have so pretended over all these elections for the past years. So I think that if we have legitimate concerns, we can put it across. If there are some positive criticisms, you can always bring it out.
How is your party handling the upcoming internal polling to choose your candidate for the 2024 general election, the candidate that will lead your party in the presidential poll?
Yes, the process started. So there's a special electoral college that will take care of that particular process. So to that effect, we have giving assurances to the rank and file of our party that this presidential primaries will be conducted in a very free, fair, transparent manner. It is important that we do so that the entire party will be united behind the person who will emerge as the flag bearer. So yes, I can confirm that we have started the process, and then hopefully by Monday, the filing of nomination forms would have ended. The period for the filing of nomination forms would have ended. And then by December, December 4th, that will be the election date, the main for the election of the presidential candidate.
Attorney Henry Nana Boache is the national organizer of the governing NPP. He spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. In Zambia, opposition groups are calling on the international community to monitor the human rights situation in the country. At a recent joint press conference, leaders of opposition political parties expressed concern about what they say is the shrinking of political place, a move they say undermines the constitution and is an affront to democracy. The leaders also say there appears to be the use of state institutions, including the police and the anti-graft agencies, to intimidate and harass opponents of the administration. Supporters of the governing party reject the accusations. They are calling for the investigation and prosecution of Zambians who break the law, including for financial malfeasance. For more about the opposition concerns, I reach Harry Kalaba. He is a former Zambian foreign minister and the leader of the Citizens First Party.
The major concern that has happened in our country is that right now, political leaders are getting to be persecuted. There are a lot of arbitrary arrests happening. The rule of law is not being followed. And basically, like Zambia is cascading down into a military junta. We have the political space shrinking every day. And so political parties felt that it was time that they put their voice together and aired out this grievance that is currently happening in Zambia.
The fact that some politicians have committed alleged crime doesn't mean that law enforcement should look the other way if there's an investigation going on and they have been found to be culpable. There's evidence of breaking the law. Should they go free just because they are opposition people?
Not really. The truth of the matter is that the press briefing that we had was not about people getting prosecuted, those that had perceived to have looted public coffers. It was about the procedure and the manner in which the arrests are being done. If, for instance, someone is given a summon by the police to go and appear, there is nothing wrong with that. But we're talking about a case where people are being followed in their homes, people are being followed in car washes, people are being followed in car parks, and that is where the problem is, because you can just be picked up at any given time without being summoned to the police. So get it right. It is not a protest against people being persecuted or people being arrested for the crime that they could have committed. But it is the procedure, the manner in which these things are being done is what is worrisome.
Do these processes you talk about infringe on the fundamental rights of these individuals that you are talking about?
Exactly so, Peter. This is infringing on the fundamental human rights. And as you know, Zambia is a democracy. Zambia is a country that is being governed by the rule of law. And if we are going to profess the fact that we are being ruled by the and being governed by the rule of law, it means we'll have to follow the law to its course. In the way that we are going to make our arrest, we should follow the law. In the manner that we are going to treat our fellow human beings as they're getting prosecuted, we should follow the law. And if that is not going to be followed, then there will be a problem.
Well, the police deny that they are abusing the law or abusing the rights of individuals. But what do opposition groups, including yours, mean that the political space is being shrunk?
Right now, as you and I are talking, Peter, almost all the political party leaders, myself inclusive, must be facing one or two issues against them currently. I will give you an example of myself as the leader of the Citizens First. Just 6 months ago, I received the police at my residence together with the Anti-Corruption Commission, and they came and restricted my property across the country, saying that these could have probably been gotten through proceeds of crime. And yet, I had left government some 8 years ago. But government is using state institutions. Government is using state machinery to try and undermine the importance of the opposition political parties in our country. They want to instill fear. They want to make sure that those that are seen to be talking, they slap them with charges, or they give them cases that they can keep them busy. And in that way, the ruling party will feel that they are safe. Now, that is why the political space is shrinking.
The government has sharply denied these accusations as just a publicity stunt, just to embarrass the government and make the government unpopular. But that the promises they made, they are keeping them.
The government of President Hakainde Hichilema is playing a lot of hide and seek. During the day, they are saying that they are Democrats and that they profess democracy. During the night, political opponents are being suppressed. They are being picked up from their houses without following the due process of the law. It is not even an item that one would say they want to scandalize government. It is just that the current regime is hell-bent on suffocating all political parties so that Zambia can become a one-party state. This is what we have said will not happen, and that multipartism in our country is part of democracy, and we are willing to live up to that speed of ensuring that democracy is upheld.
Harry Kalabah is a former Zambian foreign minister and the leader of the Citizens First Party. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Still in Zambia, the country says it has reached a long-awaited deal to restructure $6.3 billion of its debt, including its loans from China, its largest private creditor. Zambia was the first African country to default on its debt during the coronavirus pandemic, and analysts say the deal paves the way for developing countries in debt distress. Zambia lawmakers Friday hailed the deal, as Kathy Short reports for VOA from the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
Zambian lawmakers were in a jovial mood Friday as they sang the national anthem during a parliamentary session. Setting aside their political affiliation to celebrate their agreement, National Assembly Speaker Nelly Muti congratulated lawmakers in parliament for singing the national anthem with vigor and strength. She joked that even the leader of the opposition joined in the jubilation. Zambians across the country, including online, joined in the celebration. Zambia Defense Minister Ambrose Lufuma welcomed the debt restructuring deal when he addressed lawmakers in Parliament Friday and congratulated the country's president, Hakainde Hichilema.
It is a done deal. In restructure, fortunately, we have a visionary leader, a leader of commitment, a leader of love, who went through a lot of hardships.
President Hichilema said on Twitter Thursday that the deal is a major milestone in the country's journey towards economic recovery and growth. In a statement released in Lusaka Thursday, Secretary to the Treasury, Felix Nkulukusa, said under the agreement, the official creditors will provide a debt restructuring plan on Zambia's debt carrying capacity at the end of the fund-supported program. Nkulukusa said the terms of the agreement will be described and formalized in a memorandum of understanding between Zambia and its official creditors. International Monetary Fund Managing Director Kristalina Georgieva, in a statement Thursday, congratulated Zambia on the deal. Having successfully restructured its debt means Zambia will be able to receive another $188 million tranche of money from the IMF. Economic Association of Zambia senior economist Trevor Simumba told VOA Friday that the agreement is a game changer for Zambia. Simumba said now the hard work starts to get the $6.8 billion that is still outstanding with private creditors.
And so it signifies a significant step. It signifies that the international community is 100% behind Zambia, and I think it's very good news for Zambia. What is important now is to understand that there's going to be a lot of work now that has to go into the nitty-gritty of the deal.
The Ministry of Finance says Zambia owes China more than $6 billion, while other bondholders are owed $3.5 billion. Government data indicates Zambia's total external debt as of the end of 2022 is estimated at $18.6 billion. Kathy Short for VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
Designated in Kenya as a special economic zone aimed at serving global businesses, Tourivest International Financial and Innovative Center is judged as one of the biggest infrastructural entities in East Africa. This, officials say, will help significantly boost both Kenya and Africa's global investment profile. They also say it aims to position the East African country as a hub for global investment and job creation by providing a platform where businesses can market themselves. James Moria is the chief executive officer of Centum Investments. He talks to me about the benefits of the Two Rivers International Financial and Innovation Center and how it fits into Kenya's economic agenda.
It's a special economic zone, meaning it benefits from a range of fiscal benefits where enterprises that are seeking to access the global market can locate themselves and be able to enjoy a world-class environment and enjoy the various fiscal benefits, such as a much lower tax environment and other benefits around work permits, etc. So that then they can be able to offer their services competitively to the rest of the world. So the benefit for Kenya and Africans is an opportunity to enhance the productivity of our human capital and create additional employment. The opportunity for companies in the developed world is you can offshore your jobs to markets such as Kenya. And we are hosting people from all nationalities who can be in this particular environment, and you can access these services competitively.
So how does it benefit the ordinary Kenyan after it was gazetted?
So I think the direct benefit for the ordinary Kenyan is around the issue of employment. Today, one of the biggest challenges we are grappling in Kenya and many other African countries is a very high unemployment rate. So to the extent that we can attract service entities that can create significant employment, I think that touches directly to the lives of many ordinary Kenyans. There's no single family, including mine, that does not have a young member of the family, whether a graduate or a college graduate, who is unemployed. Our objective is to create opportunities for as many Kenyans as possible.
Kenya, I know, has its own agenda, economic agenda. How does this dovetail into that agenda?
You know, Kenya has an economic agenda to increase trade with other countries, and those trade include trade in services. And one of the biggest natural resources Kenya has is human capital. So our biggest challenge is to enhance the productivity of this human capital, to convert it into, to put it into productive use. And you've seen our government engaging, even with the US government, negotiating trade agreements. And one of the elements that is there is trade in services. So to the extent we can now be able to attract entities here, global entities to Kenya, then operate in a relatively more relaxed fiscal environment. The objective is to create employment and for us to export those services, again, to address the current account deficit that that we are facing, and obviously to have more exports to other parts of the world.
Talk to me about how TRIFIC is designed to act as a strategic driver to Kenya's economic vision.
TRIFIC is a custom zone. It's a special economic zone. It is, our specific focus is on services. So it is a platform. So it's sort of comparable to other international financial centers, whether you're familiar, say, with Casablanca Finance City or Kigali Finance City. And the idea is around attracting entities, either in business process outsourcing, tech companies, fintechs, to locate themselves here and to give them an environment where they can be competitive by the time they land their services in whichever part of the world they're landing. and to leverage on the significant human capital that we have. And the other brand promise we want to deliver as TIFIC is to cut out the red tapes. So we are then going to be the interface between these enterprises and government.
What do you think are the prospects of TIFIC, and what should be the expectations of Kenyans?
I think the prospects of TIFIC are good for the following reason. One, there's a need from the consumer markets globally. You are having declining birth rates, and therefore there's a shortage of skills and talent in many countries. Africa and Kenya in particular is probably one of the countries that will continue to have a skill surplus. Leveraging on the digital platform that exists now, and the developments post-COVID where many jobs can be done remotely, we have a very unique opportunity. So I think it's an opportunity that has come at the right time when we have a surplus here of human capital and a need across the world. And by providing an enabling environment, because that has been the biggest challenge to many business scaling up in this particular country, has been just citing the business environment. By us dealing with it, I think we're going to be very well located to meet the aspirations of Kenyans.
James Moria is the Chief Executive Officer of Centum Investment. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Artificial intelligence is changing how wildlife reserves prevent poaching, with smart cameras, drones, and other technology helping rangers protect endangered species. For VOA, Kate Bartlett and Zahir Kasim report from Limpopo, South Africa.
The potential pitfalls of artificial intelligence have sparked concern recently, but there's one area where advances in technology are proving beneficial. Wildlife rangers in South Africa say machine learning is helping them fight the poaching of rhinos and other endangered species. Tim Finn is operations manager of the anti-poaching unit at the Lapalala Wilderness Reserve.
Well, it's changed a lot. I mean, we've gone from just guys on the ground and a couple of guys on hilltops with binoculars to top of the range things such as thermal cameras, thermal binoculars, drone systems, license recognition cameras on the roads.
Technology hasn't replaced old-fashioned boots on the ground, however. It's just being used in conjunction with them. Glenn Phillips is CEO of the Lapalala Wilderness Foundation.
Foot patrols picking up tracks, that's manpower, in other words, vehicles. And then, of course, a canine unit to do follow-ups if there is an incident reported.
One of the systems Lapalala and many other reserves in Africa use is Earth Ranger, which was developed by a US company set up by Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen and is free of charge. Jez Lefcourt is Earth Ranger's director.
Earth Ranger is a software platform that integrates with many, many, many different sources of data. And so that's actually over 100 different sources now. And those sources include things like the radios that rangers are carrying so that we can track their location, and vehicle tracking devices, aircraft tracking, camera traps, acoustic sensors, remote imagery.
The artificial intelligence aspect of Earth Ranger learns to recognize if the figures seen on camera are human, vehicle, or animal. If it's a human, the system alerts rangers in the operations room. They then determine if there's a need to take any action. And so-called tech for good products are constantly evolving. Dutch startup Hack the Planet recently developed AI-powered wildlife cameras that can detect poachers in real time. Previously, the camera traps, as they called, had a major flaw. Tim van Dersen is a software engineer at Hack the Planet.
You have to go back to the camera to collect the SD card, and then you know what's on the SD card. So, for instance, you go back there every 3 to 6 months, and then, for instance, you know that there's a poacher 3 months ago. We made these cameras smart so you know immediately that there's a poacher in your park in real time.
Such technological innovation can only be helpful for animals like rhinos, elephants, or rescued pangolin, an African anteater that's the most trafficked mammal in the world. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Lapalala Wilderness Reserve, Limpopo, South Africa.
is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs and Music from our African collection. But first, it's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. The CAF Under-23 Africa Cup of Nations Morocco 2023 got underway on Saturday at the Prince Moale Abdellah Sports Complex in Rabat. 8 teams will be battling for top honours and the 3 slots that guarantee qualification to the Paris Olympic Games 2024. Host Morocco showcased their determination and fighting spirit as they rallied from a goal down to secure a hard-fought 2-1 victory over Guinea in the opening Group A match of the CAF Under-23 AFCON on Saturday. The Under-23 AFCON action continues on Sunday as Ghana takes on Congo Brazzaville in a Group A clash, while defending champions Egypt lock horns with Niger. Elsewhere in Tangier, Mali will square off against Gabon in what it promises to be an exhilarating encounter. Staying with football news, the Super Eagles of Nigeria coach Jose Peseiro's job is in the hands of the fans after Football Federation President Ibrahim Gusau said he will let fans decide if the Portuguese should stay on. Peseiro, who had coached Porto and Sporting in his home country and took over Nigeria in May last year, had led his side to the African Cup of Nations finals in Ivory Coast starting in January, but his contract ends on June the 30th. Despite Nigeria's continental qualification results have been mixed under Peseiro, even as he has been able to select from an array of players plying their trade in Europe's top leagues. Since failing to qualify for last year's World Cup in Qatar, Nigeria have won 4 and lost 5 of their games. The second edition of the African Beach Games enters day 2 in Hammamet, Tunisia on Sunday. The competition, which began on Friday, has a total of 30 events on the schedule. The 30 men's and women's events will be spread over 16 disciplines, including 2 demonstration sports. Meanwhile, the National Olympic Committee of Zambia has expressed its regrets after being forced to withdraw a large portion of its team from the Africa Beach Games in Hammamet, Tunisia. Zambia was expected to be represented in the air badminton, beach handball and beach volleyball after the National Olympic Committee of Zambia confirmed its participation in March. All events are qualifiers for this year's Association of National Olympic Committees World Beach Games in Bali, but the NOCZ has announced Zambia's withdrawal from those sports due to the unfortunate inability to secure timely air tickets for the team's travel to the Tunisian resort. In basketball news, Rwanda has qualified for the 2023 FIBA AfroCAN tournament thanks to a 70-48 victory over Burundi in the final game of the Zone 5 qualifiers. The 2023 FIBA AfroCAN will take place in Angola between July 8th and the 16th. AfroCAN is a continental basketball tournament that focuses on promoting players that play in Africa. The competition allows national teams to summon a roster that comprises only 2 overseas-based players, while the rest of the 10 should be based on the continent. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Days before the commencement of voting yesterday in Sierra Leone for a new president, new parliament, and new local authorities, much concern was expressed by institutions of the African continent about the maintenance of peace and security during the voting. However, early reports show that in the early hours, midday in the capital at least, voting was going smoothly and the situation was calm. However, again, developments in Russia may present problems on the security grounds for the African continent. The report stated that the head of the Wagner private military group, which has been fighting in Ukraine, posted a video stating that it had taken command of the regional group in Rostov and was in full control of the airport. There have been also reports that President Putin announced that there had been a mutiny and treachery by the Wagner group, and that the group was stabbing Russia in the back. Although there have been some exaggerated reports that the Wagner forces were approaching Moscow, implying that the government of President Putin may be in jeopardy, other reports stated that the headquarters of Wagner Group in St. Petersburg has been occupied and taken over by the Russian government and security forces, and surveillance has been made about the leader's extensive commercial interests in Russia. Africa may have problems, as was referred recently, because the Wagner Group has been playing some role in the continent. Western governments have long expressed deep concern that the Wagner Group was an extension of Russia's influence in Africa, and had said that they could not accept Russia's insistence that Wagner Group was a private military. They say it is an extension of Russian power and influence in the continent. Not only in Mali, but reports said in Central Africa, in Burkina Faso, and reports also say that Wagner may be involved in the conflict in the Sudan between the government forces and the militias. The question for Africa would be, what will be the impact security-wise if the Wagner Group is now being condemned by the Russian government, and what will be those forces on the African soil, particularly for Mali? People of Mali recently approved a new constitution which enhanced the power of the new president, will be voted later on. And we also know that Mali has been insisting for a long time that UN peacekeeping forces should be withdrawn from Mali, hoping to rely on the security forces of Wagner. So if it turns out that Wagner is completely dismantled in Russia, one has to keep a close eye on the implications for those places in the African continent where Wagner is operating. Therefore, governments in Africa should keep their eyes on the ball to see what are the implications for the African continent, no matter what will be the outcome of this clash between the Wagner Group and the Russian government. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs.
Heavy right now.
It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Express myself the only way I know how. Yeah, this is the side I don't share much. The side where success becomes handcuffs. That's why we're a sad bunch. How could we say we never had nothing when we had love? We living through Instagram pictures and videos. The filtered reality is beautiful. Even got our sisters, they mad for material. They give blood and sweat for a syllable. I've done enough, I have it all. But not everything, but everything I prayed for. And even if it ain't working out, I know God is still good, so we stay strong. No more external validation that I need, cause they can monetize all this air that I breathe. So it don't matter if I'm stuck or I elevate. Every day's a gift, so we celebrate. Yeah, that's why my sisters on the grind working two jobs. That's why my homies on the corner selling loose drawers. I know you're trying to stay alive and salute you. Yeah, this for the ones who feel lost in this cold world. The devil trying to make you feel like it won't work. Just keep the fire burning while we soul search. Some days I feel strong and complete. Some days it gets heavy like my soul is obese. So how do you approach all of these? You tell yourself that you're worth gold or unique. It's not over for me. There's still a lot of growth. I believe I survive all over with ease. Still I stand with black eyes and a couple of war scars. Dubs over L's on a scorecard. Nobody in this world is designed like me. B-L-A-C-K-K-I-N-G. Man, I've been through the gutter. Came out harder. One thing about life, but till I go back to black, I let how I can attack. I let the plan, the ball, and can I have one knock? I'm going to a shot, there's no one like you. This is my truth, wouldn't change a thing about me, even if I could. Yeah, this for my sisters on the ground working two jobs. This for my homies on the corner selling loose drawers. I know you're trying to stay alive, I salute you. Yeah, this for the ones who feel lost in this cold world. The devil trying to make you feel like it won't work. Burning while we soul search. Yeah. Keep the fire burning while we soul search. Keep the fire burning while we soul search. Keep the fire. Keep the fire burning while we soul search. I got you, I feel you. Yeah, this for my sisters on the ground working two jobs. This for my homies on the corner selling loose drawers. I know you're trying to stay alive, I salute you. Lost in this cold world. The devil trying to make you feel like it won't work. Just keep the fire burning while we soul search. Yeah, this for my sisters on the ground working two jobs. This for my homies on the corner selling loose jaws. I know you're trying to stay alive, I salute you.
I got it confidential. Only was an instrumental, yeah. Give me brains and intellectual. Nothing is a coincidence, yeah. If the guess that she wanted, I got a whole lot of them. I got a whole lot of them. I know fit the whole lot of them. Girl, I'm not sober. Let me see ice and soda. Many things they go down. If you're on me, I'm my soldiers, yeah. Girl, you think that you want to. I got a whole lot. I got a whole lot of them. I ain't no fit to hold all of them.
I say I put in 10 toes, now I don't blow. If that chick bad, I go carry her. My neck is cold, I don't come down. No bad energies, I run here. Yeah. Got a whole lot of vibes and a whole lot of bad girls and a whole lot of. Give me a wine and a whole lot of I say we come with the vibes and a whole lot of bad girls and a whole lot.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington.
I'm not afraid to
on the same night. The same night I was thinking about big nights. My shawty, yeah, you know it's a fit, right? A fine face and the body on skin tight. Skin tight, so you know it all fits right. Man, this year I was giving them fist fights. Fighting on my demons at midnight. While blowing back, I smell my windpipe. Turning on, slipping my shit right. Now I'm at the O2 past midnight. I'm playing two nights and I'm outside. Feels right, now you know it all feels right. I told them not to sleep on me. I told them to see something. You want some money, go pay money. I told them not to sleep on me. I told them to see something. You want some money.
Yeah.
Clemente. Nangoti XYZ. Dova viri uri wana pana jet. Ana zvigona akanga auye bet. Ndatenga karenda ndiri kusimbisa madet. Asi kana zvapera, zvapera. Usafaite chingo zvinetera. Iko katika kekuda kufixa. Wawasiyana naye murudo kaneka kuzvinyepera. Chonjera kuzviviringira life yako nekuda kupowa ma ex. Unenge uchapera mari nemabhanduru uchida kupowa ma ex.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Mike Hove, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, he that is chased by a lion, he who is chased by a dog, do not run the same way. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.